sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah! See, a United States astro robot becomes a creature of death.
Oh. And Dave.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain! Back to the House of Pain!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast from classic cults and a little cheese in between. The movies are beef. Entertainment is grade A. And I'm your host, Mr. Jason Giaconetti. And this time out, I'm joined by my brother, Mr. Luke Giaconetti.
Hey, Jay, how's it going? I know what y'all are thinking. Hey, don't your brother do that show about giant lizards? Well, you're in luck tonight. Set the Wayback Machine to 1959. We're taking a look at a movie that does what it says on the box with the giant Gila monster.
And we'll get to it right after this.
This engine's still warm.
Say, did you see the skid marks out here? They go at a direct right angle to the direction of travel.
No digs in the macadam either. Somebody was hurt. There's blood all over this thing.
What is this black menace that kills everything it sees and hears? No human mind could imagine the enormous destructive power of this maddened, killing thing. If you're young people in love, look out. If you're driving a lonely road, you're as good as dead.
There's been a lot of livestock missing lately. That doesn't make headlines, but now it's people.
Never in the history of the United States, a monster of such size and power and horrifying hatred of man
Giant Gila Monster was released June 25th, 1959, with a 74-minute running time. Had an approximate budget of just under $140,000. Your director was Ray Kellogg of the Kellogg fortune. No, Ray Kellogg made the Killer Shrews.
Right. I was going to say those two movies, yeah. The Killer Shrews and the Giant Gila Monster, always are together because of the Ray Kellogg connection. He made both of them. He wrote both of them and directed both of them.
Yep.
And what's crazy is that Kellogg has a very long and varied list of credits under visual effects, special photographic effects, special effects. Hmm. All through the early 50s. But then he also made a couple of these little indie movies on his own, too. So he was mostly a special photographic effects guy. And we're not talking about, like, necessarily monster movies here. I mean, it's a litany of different movies, of everything from, you know, A Blueprint for Murder to Gentlemen Prefer Blondes to How to Marry a Millionaire, Demetrius and Gladiators, Denny Longlegs, So Many Splendored Things, The Left Hand of God. You know, there's The Last Wagon. There's all sorts of movies here that he was involved with doing photography, special photography. Mm. And that was how he got to do these movies, the Killer Shrew and Killer Shrews and the Giant Eagle Monster, because he did the special effects. And the deal was if you do the special effects, you can make the movie too. So he got to write them and also direct them, or at least come up with the story. But he got to direct them.
Yeah, the story is credited to Ray Kellogg, and Jay Sims is credited with the screenplay itself. Your producers are Ken Curtis, B.R. McLendon, and Gordon McLendon of McLendon, McLendon, and Curtis. McLendon is obviously that if you think the distribution company was McLendon Radio Picture Distributing Company, excuse me, easy for me to say. This movie's got a lot of, it's funny, when Dad and I talked about the Hideous Sunday movie, we talked about how it was kind of shot on weekends with, you know, all these different places and different people were acting like as the, you know, not, it was, you know, Robert Clark's movie, but it was like this person directed this little bit. This is the kind of thing like that. This movie kind of feels like, hey, we got these people that we can get. Why? Well, they work for our company. Great, let's take them in the movie. It's just like all weird things they started having, kind of putting together.
Right, and the, you know, the McLendon family is all over this picture. Gordon McLendon he was financier of the film. And Gordon McLendon, he actually was not really in film. He was in radio. And he owned several stations throughout. This was filmed outside of Dallas, Texas, along the Killer Shrews was as well. So this was in Central Texas, and he owned a series of radio stations all throughout the area. And he was the money man behind all of this. And that's why I think that we have certain aspects of this film that play out involving music, is because you had a radio guy, and not like indie radio, like top 40 radio and such. Was the financial backer for the film.
Yeah, and then we get to the people in the movie. He had been in a number of low-budget monster and zombie movies. Lisa Simone, who's the French, she's the French exchange student. She actually was a contestant in Miss Universe in 1957. Disc jockey is Ken Knox, who's an actual KLFI disc jockey.
Which was Gordon McLendon owned the station that Ken Knox DJed at, which is why I got to play Steamroller Smith in this movie. And KILT, the station that he works for, was, I know you're shocked, an actual station that the McLendon owned.
it says KLIF here, technically. It doesn't matter.
The whole KILT was known as
Kilt. That's the AM station.
He got Kilt. That's how they'd say it in Texas.
So, and then Shook Fitter is the comic relief of the whole thing. He's the drunk. This is a movie that the poster alone, with the giant Gila monster looking hand coming down, grabbing at the young lady and the guy in the souped up hot rod. I think that says exactly what you're getting. I don't think there's anything that you're, the poster shows you what you're going to get.
Well, you know, you had talked about this on a few previous episodes. I'm thinking specifically on Tarantula. You had said the one sheet is very memorable, but there's never a scene in that film where the tarantula holds the woman in his pedipalia. Whereas here, this is pretty much exactly the movie. There's kids in a hot. This is like the, in fact, this is the very beginning of the movie. It doesn't bury the lead. You know, it's like kids in hot rod, giant Gila monster claw, and the title, it's not something cute. If our British fans will know, does what it says on the tin, right? It's the movie Giant Gila Monster. Let's call it the Giant Gila Monster.
even if the giant Gila monster itself is really a Mexican beard lizard, but it's okay.
Yeah.
It looks like a Gila monster. So I don't have a super long, folks. I'm sure Luke and I will just talk about this and flesh this all out as we go. Because that's kind of how we do it with Dad. I kind of make sure I have a longer one, so because we're going to talk through, because I want to make sure I hit all the points. But to be honest with you, unlike some of the other movies we've covered recently, this one doesn't have quite as much story to it. It's a lot of the same. Yes. Put it that way. It's like, it's not Vampire Lovers, which literally is the story, and then start over and tell the exact same story again. But you know, What is? Anyway, here we go. So our movie opens with a young couple of Pat Wheeler and Liz Humphreys parked in a bleak rural locale overlooking a ravine. A giant Gila monster attacks the car, sending it into the ravine and killing the couple. Of course, the car makes... So there's... It's funny when they're like, did you hear that? No.
It
is quiet for a 70-foot long lizard. It's very quiet.
Well, you know, it's funny because sometimes the Gila monster is sneaky and sometimes he makes quite a bit of noise. You know, in addition, I do have to say the sound effects for the monster, his hissing is I actually do like that. It sounds kind of like you'd expect a reptile to make, especially as he flicks his tongue out. But sometimes they folied in the sounds of him crunching through the ravine, and sometimes they leave it out. Yeah. So I guess it's like, oh, I got to sneak up on these kids. I'm quiet down here. You know, that's like the one, you know, turn the radio down. I got to see where I'm going, you know, kind of situation. But,
right, I can't see where that's radio.
Do that a couple of times in this where they have a loud diegetic sound that theoretically could cover the sound at least. And in this case, the kids are listening to the radio because they are parked, but they're also wholesome rural Texas kids, you know, so they're not doing anything too bad other than listening to the radio when they're parked. But 74 minutes. Let's not waste any time. Within 1 minute, bam, we've got getting started right off the bat. You know, I approved of that.
At 74 minutes, folks, this movie both goes quickly and drags. It is unbelievable how sometimes when we're going through this, I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And you just kind of like sit there and let the thing happen. You're like, are we done? All right, back to the story. If you had all the singing out of this movie, you definitely could get this thing into like 60.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those ones where it's like clearly they had a decent idea for a story, but actually turning the story into a script. You know, there's many sequences of, you know, our hero running the record truck. Yes, stretch that pad the film out. Yes, so you do get that. Especially guys that maybe not, you know, this is not their day job, right? Is turning a story, you know, developing a story to a script. But I will say, right off the bat, it does get started pretty quick.
Yes, so they go there, and then the next we have the scene there with the dad confronting the sheriff. Mr. Wheeler, he's confronting the sheriff there, and man, you just want the sheriff to punch him.
Well, right, the thing is, this is Texas. You can say he's hot, you know. Mr. Wheeler is very hot with the sheriff, and I do think it'll be interesting because the concern is not that his son and his girlfriend are lying dead in a ditch, but that they eloped. Yeah. And I think that's I really liked that because you get the idea that Mr. Wheeler, he's the rich guy, right? And he's the one that owns the mines outside of town and stuff. And so you get the idea that he's used to getting his way and that he thinks these country rubes are out to get his money and that, you know, some local girl. And we see that that she's very much a rural girl. She lives on a farm. Her parents are clearly honest, God-fearing farm folk that we see later. So clearly, she's trying to get her claws in him and get his money. But I really like the sheriff in this because normally, now this movie's kind of a hybrid. It's part monster movie and part like hot rod movie, right? And normally in a teaser hot rod movie, the sheriff is a jerk. The sheriff's always trying to keep the kids down. The sheriff's a square. He doesn't understand. The sheriff is a great character in this. He's on the side of the kids. The only person he gets heat with is Wheeler. You know, old man Harris every now and again, but you know, so I really liked this scene again for an indie movie. I thought this played well and it was believable. You know, you could see that these guys obviously have some kind of history and the sheriff doesn't like Wheeler bossing him around, but he's still got to do his job. So I thought that was a good bit.
The sheriff is Fred Graham. He made a number of movies all the way back into like the late 30s, early 40s. He's a lot of uncredited stuff. He was always like kind of smaller roles up until the mid 70s. He passed away at the end, 79, I think. Yeah, 79 at the age of 70 years old. But it's always kind of like uncredited small roles here and there. It wasn't like you're doing any big stars. There's no one in here. You're like, oh, that's Steve McQueen or that's no one in this movie became anyone. They just were who they were. And they went back to, you know, doing whatever they actually did, you know, kind of thing for a real job.
Right.
But anyway, so well, the sheriff goes and he's...
Well, and before we get to that, though, we get introduced to our, what I, my note is wholesome hot rod punks. Right, which is Chase and the other kids and Lisa, who is Chase's girlfriend, and you know, and they are very wholesome. Again, it's 1959, but we are, you know, again, you expect the hot rod movie, the kids to be kind of punkish, but they're not. They're just regular kids. That this is their hobby. They all are into hot rods and such, and again, it's kind of a change of pace because it's we're used to I'm thinking like the Beatniks, you know, the most well-behaved Beatniks ever. Yes. If you remember that, yeah. But Misty connection here. But again,
side racing bikes though.
So yeah, Side Hackers is a little bit later and a lot less wholesome than this movie. I can tell you now.
They're racing bikes.
Not even the kids are introduced and again they're all kind of bland. You know, Chase and Lisa are cute together, but they're likable. You know, they're not, you know, they're just regular hep cats. There's nothing. They're not delinquents. They're not criminals. You know, the sheriff even defends them to Wheeler in the later scene, saying that you know Chase is the one that keeps these kids out of trouble and all that. So it's definitely indicative of where and when it was made. I read a great review on IMDb that said as a movie this is just okay. He goes, as a slice of what it was like growing up in the mid 50s in Texas, this movie is dead on. So I like I said that it's one of the things about it that is it's a little different and to me is quite charming about this film is the depiction of the questionably aged teenagers, but that they are not
makes a point that Chase is older.
Yes.
Like, you know, he's 19. It's like, okay.
Well, no.
You
know, but Chase is a little bit older. The other kid, that's missing is 19. Wheeler's kid.
19. Oh, right.
That's the concern is that he could drive across state lines and they could elope because he's 19.
Yeah, but Chase is older.
Yeah.
And he's the bad influence. And the sheriff's like, he's been working since his dad died. He took care of his whole family and all this stuff. And he's like, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing. Wheeler couldn't care less, you know, kind of thing.
Chase, and in 59 in being set in 1959 you can kind of imply that maybe the dad was killed in Korea perhaps, you know, so it's not there, it's all just you're bringing your own knowledge to it.
Yeah.
But immediately
or
the
maybe,
sheriff,
maybe he shook hands with Danger
there, perhaps he and, did in fact make friends with Danger.
Yes.
But immediately upon both his introduction and then the sheriff putting him over, Chase is I call him Good Guy Chase, you know? It's like that, like, you know the meme, Good Guy Greg? This is Good Guy Chase, you know?
So, Chase Winstead, Don Sullivan. He's obviously, he's a mechanic kind of thing. He's also the hot rod racer, and he works for the towing company, and he works for, like, he's always, he's like, oh, you got, what's that new car? Let me soup it up for you, you know? It's like, literally, all he wants to do is work on cars and stuff, which is fine. I get it. But it's just like it's kind of funny because you would say, like, well, these characters are very one-dimensional. And they're like, I don't know what you're looking for here. If you're literally looking for, like, depth of character and all this other stuff, I think you're in the wrong place. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is the giant Gila monster.
The word monster is in the title, you know. And the word giant is in the title. Just go with that, you know.
It's a giant. Okay.
Not to be confused with the movies Giant or Monster, neither of which really delivered on either of those things as far as I was concerned. But good movies, bad monster movies, just saying.
They're not very good monster movies. So the sheriff comes and he asked them to help them look for the crash, right? So they go out and they locate a crashed car in a ravine and find evidence of a giant lizard. And I don't know how they find, like, the debris and stuff, but they also find that the tire tracks go at a complete right angle to the car. So there's no way the car skidded off the road or whatever. And this is when they find the car that was stolen across state lines and whatever. And there's no way in the world that literally the car, like, fell off the road. It had to have been pushed. But there's no way they know it's a giant lizard at this point. They just have found evidence that something big pushed it.
Right, and this is a reasonable enough point. If the tires, if the skid marks left are in this shape, it would have to be, it collided with something. But if it collided with something, there would be evidence that it had collided with something. And, you know, if it had hit another vehicle, or, you know, or if it had hit a cow, you know, we're in Texas, there is cattle. In fact, we get photobombed by a cow right at the end of the movie. You know, there would be evidence of that, but there's no evidence. The cars, you know, hit something and then just whatever they hit is gone. So again, it's a reasonable mystery. How they make the leap of logic to giant lizard, not really explained. But
yeah, no.
Again, you know, again, it they put it on the title. We know what to expect.
Right. So during this is when we learn. So they haul out the car and the sheriff's there with him, and they take the car back, and that's where he chase. You know, the sheriff tells him to take one of the headlights and put it in his car because he needs a headlight, and Chase takes the tires off because they're perfectly good tires and they're better than his tire, and he'd have a blowout. It's like all those little things that don't really mean a whole lot in the story about, like, the giant Gila monster parts.
Yes.
Are what I'm talking about. Like, it's like, okay, like, he's trying to get money to pay for the braces for his little sister.
Right, because he's good guy Chase.
Right, yeah, thing is, but you're like, okay. Well, it's fine.
Yeah, this is what I mean when I say this really is a hybrid movie, because you get the idea that they had an idea for a hot rod movie, you know?
Right, yeah, yeah.
And then they're like, well, you know, wait a minute, if we put a monster in it, you know?
Yeah.
Because the two plots really don't intersect that much. You know, you've got Chase, and he's a hardworking guy, and he's trying to – he supports his mom and his sister, and his sister is handicapped, and he's trying to get the money for her. And you know, and he's got his girlfriend, and, you know, and she's really nice too. But she works for Wheeler, and so you got that thing where she's in the – you know, she's in a position she doesn't like, and they've got to sneak around because of – you know, Wheeler would throw her out if he knew that she was with Chase.
Right.
So it's like this hot rodder movie, and the cars in this – now, this is a little before my era, but if you go on IMDb, they do have a complete list of all the different hot rods that are like the base – vehicles that are turned into these rods that the kids are driving. So that's really cool too. But yeah, it definitely feels like two different movies kind of mashed together. And yeah. Eventually somebody's going to be driving at night, you know, and here comes your title character, you know, bopping along. And with the,
so, that's when, okay. So they find, So they take the other car back, whatever. Okay, and that's when he's out with the wrecker again, because he's always in the wrecker, kind of thing. Going, he meets the disc jockey, who's there, who's said he was run off the road by a pink and black blur, but he has to tow him back. That's when he's what's his name?
Steamroller Smith.
Horatio Alger Steamroller
Smith. Steamroller Smith. And I do like that again, because that's the point where the two plots do intersect. You've got the, you know, Steamroller Smith, the idea of let's imagine, if you will, that there is a similar movie without a giant reptile in it. And he finds this guy who's crashed into the embankment, happens by him. The guy is as drunk as a skunk. He says that he saw some pink and black blur. He's like, okay, buddy, whatever. And he tows him back, and you know, then he fixes up his the fender, and he says, don't worry about it. The guy is really in his debt because the kid helped him out and he didn't have to. He gives him his card, and he's this famous disc jockey. And our kid, who's not just a hot-rodding punk, he also is a singer-songwriter, right? So this is his big break. You can see this in a completely different genre of movie.
But it
works on that level, you know.
The problem is most of this movie is literally that hot rod movie.
Yeah.
With just the Gila monster stuck in here and there. Like, it's like, huh.
You know. It's almost Slinky Puss. Like, hey, you know what you paid your money for. Here you go, right here. That's right.
There's that. He gives him the money. He gives him the 220s. 220s. Oh, my God. You know, kind of
220s. It's like, damn, dude. In 1959 money, he's like a millionaire now.
All right. So, of course, then, so the giant Gila monster doesn't stop there. The hungry reptile then decides to attack a train or a model train or whatever. Well, it definitely is a model
train. Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a model train, but...
it says Lionel on the side.
At least you don't have the little guy like throwing out the milk cartons or anything like that.
That would be so funny, kicking the milk out the
milk. Now, you know, here's the thing.
Or
and
the ice truck.
The ice truck, yeah. The
sorry, folks. You'd have to know your if you don't know your Lionel model train. So my dad could school you on that. So
yeah.
Luke and I have a lot of knowledge. Anyway, so yeah,
it takes a model train. I mean, it's the heel monster, with the exception of we've got his one big paw that we see a couple of times, which is I guess it's just a glove the way that it's moving.
Or at worst, a puppet, kind of thing.
But he's a photographically enlarged lizard. And so, of course, he's going to interact with the model train. I talked a little bit before about the sound effects. The sound effects and the Foley work for the train derailment are quite nice, because we hear him pushing his way through, because he pushes himself through the trestle bridge, collapsing the bridge, and that leads to the train derailment. And when there's a couple of things. So, of course, you hear him pushing his way through the bridge, which is nice. He's still making his hissing sound as he does. The train then derails, you know, years before the Cassandra crossing, I might add. Okay. And I do like this. So the train derails and you start hearing the people screaming on the train, which all of these scenes where you know, the whoever was in the vehicle survives the wreck with the Gila monster, you don't hear them. Here you hear the people screaming, and then he comes, you know, obviously the Gila monster is motivated by hunger. That's he eats the people that he gets knocked around in the vehicles that crash into him. The sheriff says at one point that there's been a bunch of livestock that have been missing, so he's moved up from, you know, just stealing livestock onesie twosies from herds, and now he's attacking people because he's getting obviously more bold. If this was a more modern movie, one could make an argument that about humanity encroaching on his natural environment, but we're in the middle of friggin' nowhere in Texas, so no, there's plenty of open space here. But then he comes back to start eating the people, and you start hearing them screaming again, freshly. So I like the use of that. That I thought was again really clever. I know that scene gets a lot of grief. I've seen some grief online. It's like, well, it's obviously a model train. It's like, yes, of course it's a model train. That's the way you do that scene with a photographically enlarged lizard and a budget that you have. But given that, I thought it was composed nicely. I thought Kellogg did a good job of pulling that scene together and making it, if not scary, at least addressing the horror of it all. I mean, you know, you've just survived a train derailment, which is a violent, horrific event, and now a big lizard is coming to eat you. That's just a bad day all around, you know.
So about this time, the authorities realize that they're dealing with roughly a 70-foot-long venomous lizard, because that's how you figure that out. Anyway,
The sheriff says, he's like, well, they start talking about gigantism and how a pituitary problem could do this, and he says, well, Steamroller Smith said he saw a pink and black striped board. He goes, yeah, some of the survivors from the train did too. Some were like, no, I didn't see no lizard. I don't know what you're talking about. Lizard? No, never seen him.
That's when the Gila monster is kind of getting a little more bold. He's definitely thinking like, where can I, I'm still hungry. So what happens is he decides he's going to attack, attack someone again. So he starts going to the town, right? And what's happening at the local dance hall, there's teenagers and they're having a sock hop, with Steamroller Smith as your featured DJ.
Steamroller Smith, the whitest DJ in the history of music.
Yes.
You get two free rides of my elephant in Bangkok, Siam. This is Steamroller Smith saying, this is Steamroller Smith.
So that's when you start, it busts through the wall, which is probably the most famous scene from the entire movie.
Yep.
Which is where you see the Gila monster. You definitely know someone's pushing this poor lizard's face through this. Cracking and cracking. It comes through and you're like, and that's very famous. It's in the trailers and everything like that. So it's usually the still you see from the movie.
You know what's interesting about that scene is, so throughout this, Old Man Harris has been the comic relief. Like I said, and he's a drunk, and you know he's popped up in several scenes. He witnesses the train derailment. He's at the barn dance that they're at with all the kids and Steamroller, and then Chase is playing his song. So if you in that scene, when the Gila monster breaks through the wall, everybody starts running outside, which makes sense.
Yeah.
Except Old Man Harris, who runs upstairs. He runs to the top of the barn. Now, supposedly, there was a scene that was scripted but never filmed where the Gila monster eats him, where he runs upstairs and is trapped, and the Gila monster comes around and eats him. And if you look, all the other characters appear for the rest of the movie except Old Man Harris. The only other character we don't see is Chase and Missy's mom, who is presumably at home. But we see all the other teenagers. We see the sheriff. We see Wheeler. We see Missy friend and her friend's mom. But we don't see Harris. So the intention clearly was that Harris got eaten. And you can imagine the lizard's like, oh, Jesus, what was in that guy? Jeez, he was like a 200 proof. Good God.
I think one was ripe yet.
Yeah. He's a little too ripe, maybe. Holy gee. Yeah. I need some pretzels or something. Yikes.
So all of them are outside, and that's when Wheeler's, you know, getting on the sheriff. The sheriff says, fine, you want this? He takes it, sorry, goes, he's in charge. Anyone leaves, you're in trouble, like whatever. And it's totally like, he's like, yeah, I'm in charge. What do you mean? What do you mean you're leaving? It's like, at some point you were hoping the whole crowd was going to turn on him and just be like, turn into any other hot rodded movie and then beat him to death.
I was waiting for Wheeler when all the hot rodders just run all by him to turn into Kevin Bacon from Animal House. It's like, no, all is well. You know? Right in that scene before the sheriff deputizes Wheeler, Dad would love this, because the sheriff pulls out his .30-06, got his shotgun, and he's just shooting. How many shells does he have in this shotgun? I understand the way shotguns work. This isn't it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like,
he had a lot in there.
Yeah, just keep firing, you know. Put enough lead in it, it'll go down. In fact, I think he actually says that.
That's what he says. Yeah. Like, get the National Guard. We'll put enough lead in it to put it down. I'm like, if that didn't do it, I mean, you know, what is it? If there's more of those, we'll need two battalions and it's from them.
Yeah.
They need all this machinery just to kill one of them, kind of thing. So while everyone else is there and Wheeler's trying to keep them all, kind of supposed to keep them there, Chase and, Lisa goes with them. They go back to where he works, because there's bottles of nitroglycerine, right?
Yes.
So they go in again, and he goes, don't clang them together or we'll blow up, right? And literally the plan was originally he's going to put them on the seat. At least she's there to hold them.
Yeah,
I'm
not sure how he's going to drive this, considering that I'm assuming his hot rod needs two hands to drive, right? Because you're going to need one to shift with. I don't think he has an automatic in his hot rod. It's like, it'll be okay. You know?
So he goes back. He gets all the nitroglycerine, right? And as they're coming back, that's when they realize that Gila Monster has torn apart the house where his sister was staying, so he's looking for her. He jumps out, and there she is. Now, she's got the leg braces on, so she's crippled. And she's like, I was running from him. And he's like, so there's the Gila Monster. Now, the Gila Monster is in the field, or like it's coming across there. So he leaves Lisa with his sister.
Right.
He takes the hot rod and aims it right at him. You're like, he's going to drive this thing in and blow himself up. Well, he jerry-rigs it, so it keeps going. He jumps from the hot rod, and the hot rod slams into the giant Gila monster. Giant explosion. Dogs and cats living together. Like, it's just...
Yep.
Literally, how else could the movie end except the hot rod? Because when, you were taking this hot rod movie, you're taking a giant Gila monster, and they got to meet at the end.
Right.
The machine blows up. The car explodes. He killed... Oh, it's so... It's like, well, that's how it had to end, right? And what happened?
And Chase is great because, you know, the sheriff runs up. He said, what? He goes, he's like, well, you must have got to, you know, start from the next county to make an impact like that. He's like, no, I had not if you got four quarts of nitroglycerin. He's like, you had four quarts of nitroglycerin driving over this rough field. Do you know what could have happened? He goes, you saw it. I lost my car. It's like, yes, you're a hot rod and tonk right to the end there, Chase. I love it.
Right. Well, the thing is, and now that the guy who ran the, what do you call it, is that the guy who runs the, he's out of a job, although I don't know why he's going to just take over the company. But
well,
like,
right, because, like, the guy he worked for, it's Parsons, isn't it, Mr. Parsons?
Parsons is killed.
He's one of the guys that's killed. It's like, well, you're his one employee. You know, it's like, you'll get this. So, but we were going to set him up at the mine. He'll have him blowing stuff up on Monday, I guess. So.
Yeah, but I'm just saying is why? I mean, the thing is, I would think he would have taken over the business there. Yeah. Like, well, he's dead.
Yeah, you know, you'd think that.
I got the wrecker still.
Well, because it's still got the wrecker. God knows, but you know, we never hear anything about Parson having any family or anything. It would have been it would have made sense if they'd said, well, I'll take over Mr. Parson's garage, you know, and it'll be.
Yeah,
it'll be Chase's garage, and he'll still do the same stuff that he's doing all the time. I mean,
literally, he's the only one working there.
Well, Parson comes in there and works for a bit. You can tell because they both put their knees up.
But he was drinking on the way to there.
No, Parson wasn't drinking. That's Harris that's drinking. No, Parson. No,
Harris is drinking, but I thought Parson was it when he was.
No, Parson was.
Nips there?
No, I don't think so. I think Parson was whistling because his record truck, his truck doesn't have a radio in it. But
I thought that was one of the scenes. I didn't think that was Harris. I thought it was Parson. Let me smell your breath.
No, that's outside the garage. That's not even outside the garage. That's when he goes and talks to the girl's parents, and then Harris rolls by. And then Harris takes a drink, yeah. But, you know, the thing about this movie is that, you know, it's, like I said, it's so different because it was not made in Hollywood or even in California. It was made in Texas, and it really does feel that. I really like the rural setting. You know, they make a point that, I mean, Steamroller Smith, they say, he's like, well, you know, because Chase fixes the fender for him so the tire doesn't cut into it. But he goes, well, you want me to buff it out and, you know, polish it up? And he's like, no, I'll get that done in town. So, like, so you know, they're really out in the sticks. And I think that really helps the setting. And it to me, it also informs a lot of the characters. You know, these are the young teenagers and they're not rotting, but they're still, like we said, when we see with the girl's parents, these are, you know, God-fearing folks. I guarantee you all of them went to church, you know, in their Sunday best and all that. So it really has a different feel. And you know, regardless of the fact that it does, again, even at 74 minutes, there are parts of this movie that just grind to a halt, which is astounding. Yeah. Because then there are parts that are just like, move it along. Yep, and it's like, the first half an hour of this movie, it's like, okay, yeah, things are really moving. This lizard's eating, or I keep calling him a lizard. This Gila monster's really, you know, he's pushing the plot along. But then they kind of move back into the character side and said, the only characters with any development are Chase and to a lesser extent, the sheriff. So everybody else is either a cipher or that just there to say dialogue to advance the plot. Or they're like Missy, where they're an obstacle more than anything else. You know, it does retain a certain amount of charm that it really is this mashup of a hot rod movie and a monster movie, two popular genre movies in the late 50s. So I've always found this one kind of charming, and it doesn't have a lot of ambition. It's not trying to be anything more than a B picture. In fact, it was the B picture to the Killer Shrews originally, for crying out loud. I mean, the Killer Shrews is that's the one with dogs wearing carpets, you know, which
it's such a, that's so much below this movie. like by way of like, that movie's, I mean, I'm sorry, you guys can love the Killer Shrews. If you do, that's cool. I'm just saying is the giant Gila monster is such a better movie than the Killer Shrews.
Right, and as an aside, Dogs Wearing Carpets would make a great band name. But there's little things in the story that I like. You talked about that the sheriff lets Chase take the headlight out of the wrecked car, and he takes the tires off of Wheeler's son's car. Because he's like, well, I can use them, and if they come back to claim them, I'll give them back to him, you know. And so you don't think about that. You think, oh, the sheriff's just helping him out. Well, in the last reel, Wheeler brings that up. when Wheeler's yelling at the sheriff, he says that's thievery. I said that he pulled the car out of the ravine with the wrecker before it could be investigated. That's tampering with evidence. That's obstruction of justice. It's like, wait a minute, Wheeler's got a point. You know, again, if your son had been in this situation and was missing and then but you know, not presumed dead, then you're like, well, he's stealing the tires off my son's car, you know, and then he is dead. He's like, and this kid botched your investigation because he pulled the car out of the ravine and any physical evidence of what might have happened down there is now destroyed. So the little things like that, it's like, that's, you know, you don't always see stuff like that in the creature features. They kind of, you know, they, especially the real cheap ones like this one, they don't always have little attention like that. So I thought that was a nice touch to at least set that up and then pay it off, you know? So
most of, I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, Luke and I have seen this movie, you know, a number of times, but most people, if they've seen it, most likely they saw it on season 4 of Misty, Mr. Shiner's 3000. It's very famous that this is one of them. Killer Shoes is another one. It actually, and I've never seen any of the Cinema Insomnias. It's actually from season 5. It's an episode from season 5 of that show. I didn't know that show even had 5 seasons. I've never seen it. Interesting. It was a nationally syndicated American series with the host Mr. Lobo. It's Svengoolie kind of thing.
Right.
And that's, now that, that's like, yeah.
Well, I love that Svengoolie is now nationally syndicated and you can say that and people know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
But
I'm saying this is the kind of movie you would see on Svengoolie. You know,
absolutely.
Svengoolie shows a lot of the old, you know, kind of, he shows the universals a lot and stuff like that. But you could see Giant Gila Monster on there.
Well, it helps that the Giant Gila Monster is in the public domain. So you can go to archive.org or YouTube and watch it freely without any issues.
In fact,
you mentioned that Misty. First off, that Misty is one of the most underrated episodes of that show. I mentioned the knees up. Get your knee up here, boy, because Kellogg, the way he frames this, numerous times chases someplace and he puts his knee up on something, or the sheriff puts his knee up on something, or in one really weird scene, Chase and Parsons both put their knee up on the same workbench. It's a little strange, but it's like that was his go-to for blocking this movie out, I guess, to give it kind of a youthful energy, right, to have Chase always putting his knee up. The other one I liked from that is drink this, it'll make you American. When he hands Lisa the Coke, when they're at the soda jerk. But an underrated episode of Misty. What's also funny is that this film's status as being public domain came very much in handy during the old, I think it was still under Rhino, when Rhino was doing the box sets. Before Shout Factory had the rights to do the box sets of Misty. So volume 10 of Mystery Science Theater 3000 originally contained Godzilla versus Megalon.
Because yes, it did.
They mistakenly believed that Godzilla versus Megalon was still in the public domain of the United States. Now, of course, we now know that Godzilla versus Megalon was never really actually in the public domain. It was simply believed to be. So all those releases of it that were on VHS and later DVD were actually illegal to actually release, but it was generally assumed to be in the public domain. But then Toho reasserted its copyright and those had to go away. So the Best Brains and Rhino released it thinking, oh, this movie's in public domain, we're good. They got that angry letter from Toho's lawyer. And so they quickly recalled that set and released season 10 or volume 10.2, which replaced with Godzilla vs. Megalon with the Giant Gila Monster. Now, if you, of course, bought that Megalon one, you could buy Giant Gila Monster on its own with the little, a very cute little host segment featuring Joel and the Bots and Dr. Forrester and TV's Frank saying that Frank was the one who screwed up and got the wrong giant lizard movie and needed to get this giant lizard movie, not that other giant lizard movie. So take that other giant lizard movie and throw it away because you need this giant lizard movie to complete your upgrade to 10.2.
Well, the best part is it's like throw it away and then you crow going like, why would I want to throw it away? Wouldn't it be worth money? Yeah. No. You need to throw it away.
You have to throw it away. Yeah, Joel is like, no, Crow, you have to throw it away. That also is because Frank, I was going to say, is in that host segment, Frank Conniff actually plays Tom Servo, which is the only time he did that. So I thought that was.
Yes, yeah. this actually, Giant Gila, the Gila Monster itself made an appearance during the Godzilla, the animated series there.
Yes,
in the episode that was referred to as Freak Show. In 2012, there's a made-for-TV remake called just Gila, which I didn't think was actually a remake. I thought it was like just a knockoff, but okay. It's actually listed as an official.
I've never seen
Gila. Neither have I.
So, and again, to get back to Misty, that makes me think of the host segment where they formed the band called Gila. You know, they're a rock band called Gila. So.
Oh my God. Okay, so the guy who directed the is Jim Wynarski.
Yep.
And you would know him from all kinds of stuff, including he directed the movie called Nessie and Me. And then he went on to direct his earlier films of like Dino Croc versus Super Gator and Piranaconda.
There you go. I mean, that mark of quality right there.
Yeah.
From
the worst part is I've seen those other two.
Now, what is that? Super Croc. That's an asylum picture, isn't it?
But this is Super Croc versus what did I say it was Mega Gator.
Mega Gator. Well, but those are all asylum ones, right? So.
Yeah, no, Super Gator, Dino Croc versus Super Gator.
Yeah.
That's Roger Corman Presents. No, I don't think it's...
Oh, Roger Corman Presents. That's a little bit classier than the asylum, though.
It's a 2010 television film that premiered on Sci-Fi on June 26, 2010. It's David Carradine's last movie.
Oh, my gosh.
I think I own this on DVD. That cover looks so familiar. Who is in this? This is David Carradine. That's it. This is not the one with Tiffany and Debbie Gibson.
Debbie Gibson.
And then Piranaconda. Oh my God! Stars Michael Madsen and Rachel Hunter.
I've seen that one. Michael Madsen looks like he just wandered in from the wrong movie on that entire set. He's just amused the entire time.
Oh my God!
One thing. Interesting is that they make a point of saying that the Gila monster has pink and black stripes. Now, I always thought Gila monsters were more like orange than pink. So I thought that was an interesting choice because, I mean, pink does occur in nature and lizards, you know, and reptiles especially, you get all sorts of strange colors. But that he's pink and black was an interesting choice because in my mind I always picture him like the kit that dad has of that he's orange and black, you know. So it's interesting for pink. I've never seen him colored pink. Even on the poster, his paw is green, you know. So what you'd expect a reptile to be. So I thought that was odd. The other thing about this is there's a couple of times in this where, again, the somewhat amateurish nature kind of stands out. So... the sheriff calls Chase in, and he tells him all the details about the train wreck and that they know it's a giant Gila monster, and that for some reason he grew giant. We never find out. Things are just bigger in Texas, I guess. And he lays all this stuff on him, and he says, "Well, forget about it for now. Go have some fun, will you, boy?" It's like, don't you think you should have led with that?
So folks, like Luke said, this was actually, you know, shot back to back with the Killer Shrews. They were both shot, obviously this was produced in Dallas. It was made to be a double feature, and unlike other double features in the South, they both received, because there are a lot of these kind of movies like Hideous Sun Demon, stuff like that. They never got any release. They sat and languished for like a year. They were designed to be drive-in movies. But these actually both got international and national and even foreign distribution deals out of the whole thing.
Right.
It's just kind of funny that like these movies have kind of like people, you've seen it. Like they always like, since it's public domain, they'll grab little clips of the Killer Shrews or Giant Gila Monster and they'll stick them in things, you know, kind of thing. And it's like, what? Oh, it's just, you know, everyone recognizes, oh, that's one of those old B movies. Like, they understand, like, oh, that's one of those giant movies from the 50s and stuff. And it's just one of those things that people kind of just, you know, it's what it is. It's, we've seen these unriffed. We've seen them riffed on Misty. We've seen it's just part of growing up and stuff. Doesn't understand the stuff we saw, the weird, crazy movies we'd watch sometimes. You're like, what are we even watching here? You know, kind of thing. But
yeah, the odd thing to me is always that I've seen Giant Gila Monster way more times than I've seen the Killer Shrews. I don't know why that is, but just is. And you know, and they're not, you know, neither of them are, like I said, they're not killer movies. They're not going to blow you away or anything. I like the Giant Gila Monster better than Killer Shrews, same as you sure. do. So it's, yeah. you know, it's, you know, so the, it's kind of a, it is an odd kind of cultural, relic. It definitely is a product of a very specific point in both time and space. It is a very specific point of, you know, the Southwest of Texas in this era in the 50s. And so it exists in that kind of weird space. You know, I talk about this on Earth Destruction Directive. One of my favorite things of watching a Showa, not specifically Godzilla, but any Showa Daikaiju movie, but the Godzilla films do it best, is the cultural stuff when they're in Tokyo. Like when they're shooting scenes of people driving. They do this on Ultraman too, that you'll get every now and again. There's one episode where Fuji makes Ide take her shopping, and they're in the Ginza, and you get to see actual location shots of the Ginza from 1966. Or in Monster Zero, in King Ghidorah, or Ghidorah the Three-Headed Monster, there's a great bit where they're driving, and you get to see all the cars and all the fashion. So it's a little window into that, you know? And so we get that here. This is a little window into an era from, 20 years before I was born and hundreds of miles away from where I grew up. So, you know, it to me, it's just a fascinating little thing. And, you know, we say this a lot, you know, indie films, genre films are always great for reflecting that, because even though they are genre, they still reflect the culture and the values of Jane and Joe Bloggs' moviegoer, because if they weren't popular, you wouldn't keep making them. Right. So,
right. Yeah.
They are great insight into the people that went, not just the people who made them, but the people that went to see them.
Yep.
You know, and that's like I said, I understand that, you know, demonstrably, objectively, the Giant Gila Monster is not a great movie, but I had fun watching it. I have to say, I cannot deny that I enjoy watching it as a, you know, a big lizard movie aficionado, and it is one that I like.
Yeah, no, it's a fun little movie. I mean, it's certainly not them. It's not like,
no,
you know,
no, it's not even Tarantula
like that. I'm saying it's not, you know, Deadly Mantis. It's not any of those like the classics kind of thing, but it's definitely one that a lot of people have seen. It's kind of safe. It's always on those like trailer reels. It's just one of those. Yeah, it's, oh, it's fun. It's like one of those things you're like, this is nuts.
I have a
70-foot long lizard.
I have at least, you know? I have one compilation. You know, you picked me up a couple of these over the years. They're like the, you know, 9 monster movies, 13 hours, you know, they're all public domain movies. I've got one of those. I've got one of those that it's like, it's all of the AIP TV Japanese movies. Mm-hmm. So it's all the AIP TV Gameras and you know, Gappa the Triphibia or Monster from Prehistoric Planet, you know, Gappa the Triphibia
Monster.
So it's got it's got all these Japanese movies. And then what's the last one? Giant Gila Monster.
It kind of fits.
It's a giant reptile. Sure, it's in black and white and all the others are in color. Sure, it's made in America and all the others are made in Japan. You know what? If you're watching
technicality.
Yeah, if you're watching all those, like if you like them or the Deadly Mantis or Tarantula or any of those, you'll like the Giant Gila Monster. And frankly, I put it above, you guys ranked on this a little bit in the Tarantula episode, I put it above the Beginning of the End.
Oh yeah. Beginning of the End is
really bad. You know, of all the photographically enlarged lizard movies out there, and there's a bunch. There are a bunch. I like that this one also has him just be a large lizard. He's not trying to play a dinosaur or something else. He's just a really big lizard. So it's like, okay, I can buy that.
We The beginning of the end, and the day the world ended, and the, oh my god,
Navy versus the things. Night Monsters. That's another one.
Oh my god.
Ugh.
Maybe, the problem. These What's the one that looks like Cookie Monster? That
Creature from the Haunted Sea. Now, Creature from the Haunted Sea at least has the excuse that it is a comedy, so it's supposed to look ridiculous.
Okay.
But, well, you know, that, you know what? One. That's what Roger Corman says now.
You know? Yeah, it wasn't at the time. No.
We don't know what Roger was thinking. You know.
Yeah. I know what Roger was thinking. Light and get
Light
away.
Light and get away.
So. Anyway, folks, yeah, so like Luke said, this is available for free in a number of different spots. On YouTube, it's a really nice copy on YouTube.
Yeah, there's a widescreen, very clean print on archive.org as well, which is what I watch, which is very nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's out there. It's available to you. You know, no need to go spending any money for it. Just check it out. It's well worth your time. Mm-hmm. And it's only 74 minutes. Like, this is like a, like, you know, watch it with lunch kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's nothing in it that would be objectionable for kids. There's nothing. There's no blood. There's no.
There's not even any delinquency.
Yeah, like really. These are the literally the hot rodding kids who decided that, hey, let's go on the straight and narrow, bud. You know, kind of thing. So, all right. Well, I think we pretty much you've covered this thing stem to stern.
I think so. Yeah.
You know, kind of thing.
Or could we say from nose to tail? From snout to stem.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. So I want to thank my brother Luke for coming on and doing this one with me. Obviously Dad and I have a good time doing our thing, but I always enjoy having you on because we do try to hit different kind of movies. Here, as I've mentioned to Dad often, like, we should do this, and Dad's like, do we really cover movies like that? I'm like, well, yes, Dad, there are B movies, but Dad, I think sometimes when you look at some of the, like, because he, you know, we go back to like Giant Gila Monster or Killer Shrews. It's like you and I have a different experience with them than Dad did, because Dad most likely probably saw them as part of, like, you know, you plunk your quarter down on a Saturday and you got, like, you know, two westerns, you know, a monster movie, 20 cartoons, you know, whatever, you know, the old Saturday at the, you know, down at the, with the, you know, in the Bronx where yep. Dad and Uncle Danny would go to the movies and whatever. So he probably has a different, you know, experience with a lot of these things. Like, you and I experienced them as like kids watching these kind of compilations and, you know, trailers, like, oh, I'll check these movies out. And then we saw on Misty again and stuff like that. So it's just kind of fun. Sometimes a little different take on the movies we're talking about. So I just want to thank you for coming on today and, you know, giving fans this. I know we've had this, not to get too, you know, because nothing political. You know, we don't talk politics in this show, but to say that 2020 has been, I feel like we need to unplug it and plug it back in. You know, unplug it for
yeah,
put it back
yeah. In, clear back. Something out of the cache because something is screwed up right now.
Yeah, I'm just feeling like if literally the next thing is like Cthulhu just coming out of the ocean, I'll be like, yeah, we didn't see that coming. You know, kind of thing. Like, this has been a hell of a year, folks, and I just want to, you know, you guys know, obviously, we're all trying here to, you know, if you're sitting in, you know, whatever's going on and all that stuff, at least, you know, maybe, you know, myself or my brother or, you know, the, you know, Honeywell and Hero and, you know, Scott and all the other guys part of the network, you know, kind of, they're all of us, we're all trying to give you guys at least something to kind of, you know, take your mind off things and, you know, realize that, oh man, did they wiped out, you know, the NCAA tournament and all that other stuff and whatever. You know, at least we're, you know, hopefully we can give you guys some kind of diversion, even if it is for, you know, an hour. You know, maybe you watch a movie and listen to this podcast and, you know, it chews up a couple hours here and there that maybe, you know, whatever. But what I hope, and I think Luke will agree with me on this too, is that this, we all live insanely busy lives, and that maybe this time where we had to be away from that insanity of life because we had to be, you know, self, what's the term, they it wasn't quarantine, she can't use quarantine.
No, they say you need to be self-quarantined is what they say, or self-isolated.
Yeah, no, social
distancing. Let me tell you something. As podcasters, we practice the ultimate in social distancing. I am hundreds of miles away. That's how safe I'm being. You know, can you say the same, gentle listener? You know,
the funny part is that as a modeler, I've been practicing this for years. Like, don't go out of the house and don't talk to anybody. You know, like, I can do that.
I was gonna say it was like a nerd's paradise.
Through four movies.
I was gonna say a little while before we recorded this, it's like all the sports are canceled, telling us to stay away from others and don't leave the house. It's like, what kind of nerd utopia have we found ourselves in here?
It'd be so funny if, like, you know, the only way you cure that by playing Dungeons and Dragons. Oh, I'm just telling you. So, roll it up, buddy. So hopefully
it gives you
I'm
sorry for talking over you. I agree. It's like, hopefully that, you know, we can provide you a little bit of entertainment, a little bit of, something to keep your mind off of maybe a situation that's frustrating or difficult or challenging that you have to deal with right now. I know, you know, we've all got everybody's got their own crap going on, right? That's I don't put a lot of stock in kind of the internet Facebook sloganeering. I think a lot of that is kind of, you know, kind of horse hockey, if you pardon my harsh language. But, you know, there's one that goes around every now and again, and I've espoused this for a long time. It's like, be kind, because everybody's fighting a battle you know nothing about. Everybody's got their own stuff going on that, you know, and you just helping somebody out doesn't cost you a thing. It can have great return on investment for you. So I do hope that between Bots, Bugs, and Babes and The Vault and Get Back to the Wrestling and our Destruction Directive, that we've provided you at least a little bit of entertainment and diversion. I do work Destruction Directive primarily for the money. I mean, I think there's no question about that. It's big money that I make on that show. But, you know, these littler shows, you know, these smaller shows, yeah, that's mostly just for fun. That's for the fans, right? It's a little thing to give back. I'm kidding. I'm kidding, of course. I make big money on all the shows. Everybody knows that. That's the way I roll. But
yeah, because podcasting is so lucrative.
It's friggin' lucrative, man. It's friggin' lucrative, you know. Like Professor Allen, he buys books for a quarter. No, he doesn't. He's paying big money for the books, man. It's all work. It's like, wake up, sheeple. I was talking to Bob Hansen today. You know, Y2J inside job. He worked for Vince McMahon. I'm just saying it. Do your research, okay?
Folks, this is so inside baseball right now. My dad hates when we do inside baseball. Dad and I go inside baseball sometimes, and he's like, I don't think people understand. I'm like, it's okay, Dad. This, nothing is more inside baseball than what we just did right there, except maybe when only you and I are on, when wrestling and like Hero's not with us. Then it gets real inside baseball, because then it's not just wrestling, but it's our inside stuff.
I will say the only one that was worse than that is when we did the guest spot on Back to the Bins, because ostensibly it was a comic book show. So there might have been people listening to Back to the Bins that had no friggin' clue what we were talking about, and that's okay.
Especially since I don't read comics. So. Yeah.
You sound like, well, I don't like read those comics. You guys know more about that than I do. Like, thanks, Lex Luger.
Yeah. So, all right, folks. Yeah, we're going to go sleep on top of our giant piles of money we made from the free podcast that we're not paid for.
Yep.
And we have no sponsors or anything, but it's okay. Anyway, but if someone would like to sponsor us, like we said on, I want to say Get Back to the Wrestling, where I'm still waiting for Manscaped to sponsor us so we can get the Lawnmower 3.0, you know, to kind of keep it all, you know, groomed up for the ladies.
Let me tell you something. I've never met the Hero, but I suspect he's just as hairy as the two of us. I'm just putting that out there. So.
Yeah, well, you know, so, all right, folks, so we've got a little laugh before this gets weird. Yeah, before any of this gets out of hand and weird, because it's not there yet. Like I said, you know, Dad and I got a whole lot coming up planned. Luke and I are in the talks, you know, we're still, I'm always talking to extra, you know, special guests, trying to get people back on. I know everyone, you know, like we got a lot of positive feedback on, you know, not just what Dad and I are doing, but like when we had Jonathan Inbody on, you know, he's a good friend of ours. When I had John LeMay on, I know people loved hearing from him. I know he's in the process of doing new books and re-releasing books and doing stuff like that. And, you know, just we try to get special guests on to kind of make it, you know, liven it up. And so if you have feedback, let me hear it, you know, kind of thing. Anything that's for, like, if it has to do with Luke and I, I'll share it with him. You know, it's not saying that you might not have another Bots, Bugs, and Babes meets Earth Destruction Directive, you know, episodes coming up, because we always are trying to figure where's a way we can sneak those in. You know, kind of, we did the, with the trailer ones, we had the one we had Clint on to promote, what was that?
Nosferodon.
Titanicus.
Yeah, right. Nosferodon is the new one that's coming out from Titanic Productions.
Yeah. Yeah, which is awesome. Again, if you know, the comic book and stuff like that, all those things, kind of some of those worked out that the figures, they eventually got them produced. You can buy them on Amazon. It's like, what? Is this the same guy we were talking to? Yeah. Yes, he was in college when he was doing it. So cool. But yeah, so like I said, we try to, like, you know, bring you guys the stuff that we think is cool and happening and whatever. And even if maybe the rest of the world doesn't always think it is, but it's what, you know, obviously if you're listening here, you kind of enjoy, you know, B movies, maybe big bugs, maybe some robots, you know, maybe some babes here and there, but, you know, but all right, folks. Well, thank you very much, Luke, for being on with me. It's always a pleasure, you know, having you here. So
yeah, well, I love doing bugs, bots, and babes. You know, I have just as much affection for these movies as you do. We grew up watching them, so it's they're part of the makeup that makes us who we are. So
yep. So folks, as I always say, keep those cards and letters coming, and keep watching the sky.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots Bugs Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc., are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!